we'll just get going right away. First thing I'd just like to know is where you were born and raised, and you live here in Grants, New Mexico. How long have you lived in New Mexico?
Okay, I was born in Tularosa, New Mexico, and on the 14th of March, 1931. I lived there for 4 years, and then in 1935, my family moved to Hope, New Mexico, close to Artesia. We were there 2 years, and then we moved from there to Aztec, New Mexico, where I went to school, grew up, and in 1949, I enrolled at New Mexico A&M College. It's now New Mexico State University. I graduated from there in 1954, and after working approximately a year in various positions, I entered the U.S. Air Force to fulfill my active duty commitment that I acquired by going through advanced ROTC at New Mexico State. On the 16th of May, 1955, I reported for active duty. My first duty station at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. For 6 months, I was a judo and combatives instructor, after which I transferred into the impact branch of the escape section, or the escape section of the Aero Med Lab. And during that assignment, I worked on high-altitude bailout and on parachute landing injuries. I was a test parachutist, also a test subject for Project Mercury suit evaluation. I was a test subject for various research projects involving space flight, suit evaluation, checking instrumentation for extended space flight, and a variety of items, of low bulk space diet, and various things like that.
Okay. And so you went to Wright-Patterson and you worked on these projects, then just what else did you do? And what year did you retire from the Air Force?
I retired from the Air Force on the 1st of March, 1979. I began my job here in Grants on the 2nd of January, 1979, but I was on terminal leave for 2 months. Mm-hmm. So I was actually in the Air Force 2 months while I was also working for the state.
Okay.
And I've been here in Grants since that time.
So when you left Wright-Patterson, then you went, what other assignments did you hold
from
before
Wright
you
Patterson,
retired?
From Wright-Patterson, I got transferred to Alaska, where I was assigned the responsibility as an educational specialist. That's what I transferred up there as. And was going back to the period when I was a judo and combatives instructor. That's the AFSC I went up there under.
About what year was that when you left Wright-Patterson?
When I left Wright-Patterson, yes.
And what year was that?
And that was the 4th of March, 1960. I flew from SeaTac Airport, Seattle-Tacoma area, up to Elmendorf Air Force Base in Anchorage, Alaska. I was there. The service commitment there, or the assignment, was normally a 3-year tour. But while there, I applied for graduate training in microbiology through Air Force Institute of Technology, and I was selected for that. But in order to make my return to the South 48 coincide with my entry into school, I really extended for 6 months. I was in Alaska 3.5 years. From there, I reported to the University of Arizona in Tucson, enrolled in the graduate training program in microbiology. That took 2 years, and from University of Arizona, I was transferred to School of Aerospace Medicine, Brooks Air Force Base, San Antonio, Texas, where I worked in the manned orbiting laboratory program and became a an observer in the altitude chambers, and then worked in microbiology testing disinfectants against mycobacterium tuberculosis, analyzing space foods, evaluating the use of microwave heating for SAC missile crew feeding programs, and a variety of projects like that. I was also doing diagnostic mycology for the epidemiology laboratory at Lackland Air Force Base, and that later got transferred over to Brooks Air Force Base, and I continued doing microbiological work. From there I was transferred in November 1981 back to Wright-Patterson. 1971.
Okay. You went back to Wright-Pat?
Right, back to Wright-Pat. In the impact and vibration branch, where I was assigned to the impact section. I think at that time it was the impact branch. But I was also a test subject on test equipment, vibration and impact equipment. And I was in that position doing parachute landing injury research. For about 1 year, I was transferred to the toxicology laboratory, where I was getting started in analyzing the effects of rocket fuel spills on soil microflora. And then I transferred back again to the impact branch, continuing my research on parachute landing injury.
Mm-hmm.
And about the last 6 months of my career, I was transferred to the Foreign Technology Division, where I was the FTD salesman with the Aeromed Lab, the Life Support System Project Office, the Human Resources Lab, and another fighter SPO. I was providing foreign technology to those clients. And concurrently with that, since I was not able to get an assignment to Kirtland Air Force Base or Holland Air Force Base or New Mexico State University, I was trying to get to New Mexico because of the poor health of my parents, and I wanted to get out here where I could spend some time with them before they passed on. I did not make it for my father, but I applied in various positions, and one of the positions I applied for was with the New Mexico Environmental Improvement Division as an environmentalist, and that's the position I got. And so I, after being with the FTD for approximately 6 months, I was offered a position here in Grants, and I accepted it and I'm currently retired.
So also during, when you were at Wright-Patterson there in the late 50s, you worked in the U2 project?
Yes, I was assigned work with the U2 project, Project Joy Boy, in which I developed a protocol for testing the escape mechanism. I drafted the protocol. I was not actively involved in conducting any tests. I don't know whether they conducted any tests in that project or not, but I was specifically selected to develop a protocol for evaluating the escape mechanism in the U2.
All right. Okay, so one of the projects that we've identified that may have bearing on this so-called Roswell incident was Project 7218, which became known as Project High Dive, then it became Project 7222, known as Project Excelsior. And I'd just like you to describe how you became involved and what capacity and how long were you participant in this project.
Well, when I transferred into the escape section, I was given the opportunity to work on the high-altitude bailout project, in which dummies were being launched from balloons at Holloman Air Force Base to study unstabilized free fall, and to follow on that with stabilized free fall. I got in on the very tail end of the unstabilized dummy drops, which was being conducted by Lieutenant Gene Schwartz. And I made, I think, one or two trips with Lieutenant Schwartz to Holloman Air Force Base on the unstabilized dummy drop projects, during which we launched dummies on balloons. And then upon Lieutenant Schwartz's separation from the Air Force, I stayed on the project.
And what was your capacity at this point?
I was a project officer for the for coordinating the launches of the dummy drop tests.
Okay.
I was the AeroMed Lab representative working with the balloon branch and with the at Holloman Air Force Base and the parachute branch of the equipment laboratory at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. I also relied on the instrumentation branch of the AeroMed Lab for instrumentation on the dummy drops, and also the photographic laboratory for photographic instrumentation. And I was a project officer on the unstabilized dummy drops, which lasted from 1956 until the live jumps in 1959. During in November 1959.
At what point did you? What time did Schwartz leave and you took over?
Schwartz left in the spring of 1956, as I recall.
So then, did you take over his position?
I took over his. Well, it was not a. It was not an authorized position. The AeroMed Lab had many people that were in unauthorized slots, and I was one of those. They had resource of research officers, and they had the work, and even though we were not holding down an authorized slot on the Manning document, we were doing the work. And I do not believe Schwartz was in an authorized slot, and I just took over the work he was doing. I ended up writing a tech report, part one, on Lieutenant Schwartz's efforts, and then I wrote part two on the stabilized dummy drops, which was my part of the research project.
All right. Now I'm going to probably reference the research I've conducted. I've been able to obviously get those both of those technical reports. We've gotten the project record book kept by Lieutenant Schwartz, and we've also gotten some project records that shows the where some of the dummies, some of the conditions where they were launched and where they landed, things like this. So going back to the reports, you wrote both of these reports?
Yes, I wrote both the reports. When Lieutenant Schwartz separated from the service, he was told that he had to do the tech report on his project, and he turned in, I believe, 1.5 typewritten, double-spaced pages of text, mm-hmm. and I believe some photographs, and that was to constitute his tech report. Upon reviewing the document, I felt they did not do the project justice, and I asked Major Rufus R. Hesburgh, the branch chief, if it would be all right for me to write the tech report. I believe at that time he was still the section chief, mm-hmm. because he got promoted from section chief to branch chief later on. But he was the section chief, I believe, when this was taking place. And Major Hesburgh gave me permission to go ahead and write the tech report. And I researched the project files that Lieutenant Schwartz had left, and coordinated with University of Dayton, which was doing the data reduction, and had them write the data reduction portion of the report. I can't take credit for authoring that portion, but in documenting the research that occurred during the launches and so forth, yes, I gleaned that from the project record books and wrote the report.
All right. Okay. So now we reviewing the documents, and obviously the objective of the program was to launch anthropomorphic dummies to very high altitude, 70 to 100,000 feet, and to record with photographs and things their free fall characteristics, both stabilized and unstabilized.
That is correct.
That sum it up, okay. When you use these dummies, were all tests successful, or did you sometimes have difficulty with the parachute deployment or anything like that?
It seems we had more problems than we had successes. I would not call any of the launches failures, but we had unusual things occur, like launching a balloon with a couple of dummies on it, and the dummies reach altitude but fail to cut down because of some instrumentation problem. One launch I recall we made from the runway at Holloman Air Force Base. The balloon was launched with the dummies and started ascending, and within a few seconds the dummies cut down from the balloon and they impacted there on the runway, and it was determined that the cut down command was triggered by a police radio call in Los Angeles, California.
Okay.
It was a foreign signal that caused the dummies to cut down. So we had those extremes. We had some launches that were successful. That is, the dummies were launched successfully, they cut down from balloon successfully. But to this day, I don't know whether the dummies or instrument packages were ever recovered. Because they were free-flying balloons, and they were at the mercy of the wind conditions aloft. And I know one dummy drop, we got the balloon instrumentation box that had cameras aboard, and you see the dummy dropping away, you see below the sled track that Colonel Sapp rode on, you see the edge of the white sands. That dummy apparently impacted, I think it was a failed, I think the canopy did not open properly, and the dummy impacted, presumably, in the white sands and was buried, and I don't know whether it's ever been recovered or not. I know on subsequent trips to Holloman Air Force Base, on one or two trips, I personally went out and walked the area, the white sand dunes, adjacent to the sled track, and I never found any evidence of the dummy or the parachute or anything like that. And the parachutes that we were using were bright colors to make them readily identifiable. They were international orange and fuchsia and red canopies, things like that to enhance recovery.
Okay, and then talking about the malfunctions, was there ever a situation where a streamer type situation would occur with the dummies? They would just...
Yes, I believe the project record books do reflect several streamers that occurred. The multi-stage parachute was somewhat complicated. And I think Mr. Bopri would be able to, the designer of the system, would be able to better explain the operation of the chute and possibly explain why some of the malfunctions occurred. I think the project record book, from my report, does indicate what was determined to be the problem, instrumentation failures that the parachute was released by a squib that was fired by some signal, radio signal, or some electronic signal that was dependent on altitude, barometric pressure, and a timer. And when you have instrumentation like that, it's possible for an electronic connection to become disconnected, and the signal doesn't get through, and the canopy fails to deploy.
So you could have the streamer type situation where the dummy in the bright red suit with the bright red parachute would just stream to the ground.
That is correct.
And then the other situation could be the dummies would not be released from the rack.
That occurred on more than one occasion. The dummy failed to release.
So you'd have two dummies in the release rack that's clearly depicted in the report. And then this would all come down together?
On the launch rack that was designed specifically for dummy launches. We had had problems with, we had just suspended two dummies under the balloon branch, or the balloon instrumentation pack, and the dummies would be cut away. But as they cut away, the first dummy would drag across the second dummy, and we had equipment damage, material damage, and it did cause instrumentation failures. And so the full potential of the dummy drop was not really realized.
Okay.
It was not obtained.
So when you were going to have a dummy drop, since you were coordinating all these different organizations, did you know exactly where this dummy was going to land?
We never knew exactly where the dummy was going to land. We relied heavily on the meteorology section, Duke Gillenberg at Holloman Air Force Base, and he would, upon assessing the weather conditions and the weather projections, he would recommend where we would launch the dummy to impact in a certain area. There were times when we launched away from Holloman Air Force Base. There were other times when we launched from Holloman Air Force Base, and the weather conditions were what you were going to see in weather development were predictions, and the predictions were not always accurate. So we really never knew exactly where the dummies were going to drop.
Okay.
The balloon was again free flying. And it went where the wind took it. And then when the dummies cut down, they would essentially free fall from that point to about 14,000 feet where the main canopy was to deploy. And once that canopy deploys, the dummy could be drifting wherever. And again, you didn't know exactly where the dummies were going to be cutting down. So if you had a free fall into the ground, you had instrumentation to sort of pinpoint an area, but the pinpointing was not totally accurate either.
All right. Staying with that, as far as recoveries, did you ever go out on recoveries of the dummy?
I went on one recovery, and as I recall, this was a launch made west of Holloman Air Force Base, west of Las Cruces, and the dummies cut down over the Jornada test range, which was west of the San Andres Mountains. And I did recover one package, and I believe it was instrument package and a dummy, but I don't think as I recall, we were not able to locate, or I was not able to locate, the other dummy and instrument package. It's been so long ago, I don't recall exactly, but I do recall having recovered some of the equipment, because it had been a very long day, and as I had the package in the back of the weapons carrier I had checked out, I was going back to Holloman Air Force Base. I became quite tired. getting sleepy, and I pulled off at the White Sands Missile Range headquarters turnoff of the highway, and I went to sleep, and I was awakened by a military policeman who was checking to see if everything was okay. And I assured him that I was okay and explained why I was sleeping there, and then I went on back over to Holland.
Just to kind of pinpoint the area we're talking about here on the map in New Mexico, what exactly the area would you think you recovered that particular dummy?
The dummy was north of Highway 70, mm-hmm. and it was between Las Cruces and Oregon, or between Las Cruces and St. Augustine Pass, north. And it was, I would say, approximately east of Leesburg or Radium Springs, but closer to the mountain.
Okay.
Radium Springs and Leesburg are on Highway 85 between Two of the Consequences and Las Cruces.
Okay. All right. And so how did you got this dummy? What kind of vehicle did you have?
I was in a weapons carrier. For these balloon launches, we used weapons carriers almost exclusively because we had to haul equipment, and we wanted a vehicle that we could take off-road in the event of recovery, take off-road to make launches. And so we had to have a pretty good general-purpose vehicle, four-wheel drive. I don't believe a Jeep would have been terribly practical because you don't have much space for your equipment and so forth. And
so the weapons carrier, open back vehicle?
No, it might be a weapons carrier designed like one of the ambulances. You have an enclosed, sort of like a van. But it had cargo carrying capacity.
And what did you do? You just took the dummy, I guess, and threw it in the back there?
No, when the when we went to a launch site, we seldom carried, as I recall, we seldom carried the dummy with us. We would rig up the launch package in the bay of the balloon branch on a launch rack. We would have the dummies equipped, but we still had test equipment that we had to check the instrumentation before making the launch, and we had tools and so forth, and there were generally two or three of us, possibly four, because the parachute riggers would also be with us, and so we would have, a small party going to the launch, checking the packages over before we actually make the launch. In some cases, due to the way we made the launch rack, so it had legs to stand on. It was sort of a triangular structure under which we could suspend two dummies in a sort of a partially laid out position. But we wanted the dummies not in contact with each other, so we had the upper dummy and the lower dummy. But in order to work on the package, we had to have legs so that we could have the launch rack freestanding. Now once we got it on the tied to the balloon and picked up by the launch truck, the bomb service truck, we would have to unbolt the front legs of the rack so that it would be no longer freestanding, but it had to be suspended. And this way you did not have any excess equipment or material that could possibly interfere with the dummy dropping away properly.
So these launches, you did them, you said you did some on base, but then you remember doing some west of Holloman Air Force Base?
That is correct. Over, as I recall, west of Las Cruces, but I'd have to refer to the research report.
Sure.
To be specific.
But you did Yeah, the records do show that there were definitely dummies launched from that, over in that area that we described there, west of Las Cruces.
Right.
Area. Did you ever go as far, did you ever go farther north?
Yes, on one of the trips, we got the word that some of our research package had been turned in by a rancher in the Roswell area.
Okay, over the other side of the mountains. But you never went as far north as up near Socorro or Magdalena or any of those areas?
Well, on I know on the live jump program involving Captain Kittinger, I know that we did go to Truth or Consequences. We were going to launch from the Truth or Consequences area. I don't believe we were able to make the launch because weather conditions were not satisfactory, and so we spent a day